Ben's going to be speaking about his research and also the journal as well.
I will mention the journal.
Yeah.
I can say more. Yeah.
Ben's back.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. And let me start by thanking Caroline tremendously for inviting me to be here. It's a great privilege and an honor to be with you. I will a little bit continue the line of thinking about laboratory theater and this relationship that maybe some of the things happening in laboratory theater or some of the work from that post-Grotowskian area can again have contact with anthropology in fruitful ways. But that won't be the main focus that I'm talking about today. I really am here to talk about video as a medium, as a thing, as a kind of document, and to think about, to invite you to think about, to talk with you about, hopefully, what video is, and particularly what video captures, what video documents, assuming that video is not some magical or transcendent form that suddenly captures everything, but that it has a very specific capacity, and when I say video, I mean audiovisual recording, audio as well, but has a certain ability, certain capacities that are inherent in it to capture certain things. And particularly I'm interested in, but people are talking, sorry. So particularly I'm going to talk about the relationship between video and embodiment, video and embodied practice, because I do think that video, with its limits and with its advantages, has a particular relationship to embodiment, to embodied practice, and I think that, and therefore to embodied knowledge, which I think is something that we're quite interested in here, and that video has already transformed, and the history of video, which includes the history of cinema, in some way the history of audio recording, has already tremendously transformed how we understand embodiment, how we think about embodied practice, how we think about embodied knowledge. It's already, all of that is already post-video, that we are in this room thinking about embodiment or knowledge that's in the body is already an understanding of embodiment that's influenced in some way by video, by which I mean also film in that context. So I'm going to draw one thing from my book, this book, but I'm not going to talk about it at length, but I'm going to draw one thing from it, which is this distinction between technique and practice. And I'm going to use those terms in a specific way. And I'm just to give a little nutshell of that, I'm going to talk about practice as referring to specific moments that happen. And a moment could be a big moment. So a moment could be this moment, or that moment that just happened in there, but it could also be something big like the 20th century. But it happened, it has a place and a time, and it doesn't happen again. Technique, I'm going to talk about something like things that structure that moment of practice, but I'm going to really emphasize the knowledge aspect of that, knowledge that structures practice. And I'm certainly not, just in case there's any, just to say this very clearly, I'm not talking about as if there's two kinds of things that happen, and one is practice and one is technique. So I'm not looking at certain practices and saying these have technique. As far as I'm concerned, as soon as you choose a chunk of life, it's practice already, but it always is structured by technique. So we won't be able to separate them and say here's technique, it's over here, because technique is always inhering in practice. So it's really two ways of thinking about a moment, two ways of looking at a moment, and this is, for me, quite important when I think about video and what video is doing. Basically, to give you a summary of what I'm going to try to convince you of or propose to you, I think that we can look at something, for example, like musical notation as a transcription of something that happened, but then, in the history of Western musical notation, it gets detached from the act of transcribing what happened, and it becomes instead a set of instructions of what you should do. And this is how this document behaves. And I think in some way all documents behave that way. They are a trace of something that happened, but then they are also instructions or some kind of source or knowledge that is transmitting what you might do. And I'm going to try to introduce or propose to you the idea that video works in this way as well. So, of course, video is documenting a moment of practice. I think my HDMI connection does that, so don't worry about that. Of course, video is documenting a moment of practice, but I'm going to say it's not only documenting a moment of practice. It's also documenting technique. And in order to introduce this, because I'm not trained as an anthropologist, and I've only very recently begun to learn about the currently existing field of the ethnographic video essay, which I'm quite interested in, but I'm not going to introduce that here because I don't know enough about it. But I think it's something to be juxtaposed with what I'm going to introduce, which is video documents of people who, in addition to understanding themselves as being alive and having a practice and having a thing that they do, also somehow understand themselves as having knowledge, which is being transmitted through the video. And I'm going to suggest probably that we could look at all videos as if it's not merely this moment of practice, but also this knowledge, that we accord a certain kind of knowledge to the person who's documented in the video. So to make this concrete, I'm going to show you a bunch of short videos in this talk. To make this concrete, let's start with some historical videos. I'm going to show you not one, but four historical videos next to each other. Some of you have seen this before. This is a montage that I've been sharing for maybe 7 years now because I find it really evocative of, well, it turns out that for me what it's doing is it's really evoking this relationship between practice and technique, and it's really demanding that we not see video only as documents of practice, but also as documents of technique. It's a little installation, it's a little video installation sort of a thing. Epistemic Objects is the name that I'm calling the montage, and I'm reading a text over it, but we won't listen to that. But basically, these are four historical videos from the 30s and the 60s, 70s, documenting people, Tirumalai Krishnamacharya, Maria Oshiba, Janet Adler, and Rishi Chestnut, and they're all doing something. And in this case, we don't have to ask, is what they're doing embodied? And we don't have to say, well, all practices are embodied, etc. Because what they're doing is very clearly working through embodiment. And they're doing very different things. And the first thing I would say is that we can look at these videos in many, many different ways. And one thing that, of course, it's essential to do is to analyze these videos in terms of the moments of practice that they capture. And to think about the differences between these moments of practice, and to think about, for example, geographically, where these moments, where these things are happening, where these practices are happening. So we can think about geography, we can think about nation, the role of nationality, some kind of culture building. We could think certainly about gender, the gender of the practitioners, how they're constructing their genders through the practices. There's differences in age. There's neurodiversity. There's strong differences in intention. We have, I want to avoid categorizing these. I'm not trying to give any schematic upon them, but I think we see martial applications. We see healing applications, healing in different senses. We see performative theatrical applications. So there's all kinds of different things that they're doing. But the reason that I've been juxtaposing these videos is because we're looking at moments in which people are, through research, inventing fields of technique and fields of knowledge which are still available to us today, even though all of the practitioners, except for Janet Adler, who's quite old, are no longer alive. And we also see that some of these, the ones at the top, have become massive phenomena. So something about this modern postural yoga that's being developed there, or this Aikido that's being developed there, something from this practice is accessible to you in probably any major city that you go to. You can walk in and say, I'd like to do some modern postural yoga. I'd like to practice some Aikido. You might not find the plastique so often, but you will find post-Grotowski and actor training. And you can be certified in dance movement therapy in the US, and you can practice it in various places. So this technique has traveled. And the practice doesn't travel, and so we have to say what technique is traveling, because also some of the technique, if we analyze in terms of what are they doing, of course, it doesn't all travel. bits and pieces travel, things are adapted and appropriated in many different ways, flowing through many different politically significant and ethically significant relationships and contexts, but something travels, and it's this that I want to think about, how video is capturing this thing that travels. Now, in terms of this way of thinking about embodied practice, I want to kind of gesture towards work that's happening in dance studies, because I think in some respects it's the most sophisticated that I'm aware of in terms of specifically the digital analysis of embodied practice. There's some work that's been done on William Forsythe's choreography, which is really pushing the limits of digital analysis and what can be done through this kind of digital object and through very complex, also boutique-like designed web platforms. And so it's very interesting work. There are limitations, and there's a context there that's around dance, which immediately is complicated as soon as you're discussing anything else. And I think even in thinking about laboratory theater and the way that it's song-based, you wouldn't be able to draw geographic lines in the same way, but of course that's true for any area of technique. So I'm not going to go too much into this, but I want to mark it as a kind of big area. And then I want to focus much more narrowly on the video document, the little piece of video, the single, which we could call the linear video, or just the video where you start it and it goes and it stops. Here's an example of a recent video document. It has some montage in it, but you'll see that its focus is very narrow. And of course, we can step back to it and analyze it in terms of the practice, and we need to situate it. But clearly, from the perspective of the people who are making the video, they would be disappointed, I think, if we looked at the video and we said, this is what they do. They want us to see the video not as only what they do, but as what we could do, and they want us to be excited about doing it. So this video is interesting to me because it has a kind of a commercial application, right? And they're even wearing branded t-shirts to tell you where you can get this training if you want to go and work with them. It has a branding quality, and it has incidental music that's added, which is not necessarily part of what they're doing, but it helps you get into the feeling, right? So it's not quite... but it is. It is somehow still a research document in the sense that... And some of their later documents, if you look online, are much more. There's much more montage, and it can be much more wide. But this is a very narrow document, because they're just showing you what we figured out you can do if you put a tennis ball at the end of a shoelace. Let's put a tennis ball at the end of a shoelace and play with it for 2 years, or 3 years, for hours. And if you watch it several times, then you begin to see... It's a whole territory. It's an epistemic object that unfolds because you can have it at the head level or at the chest level or at the feet level. Then you can go between the levels. Then if you go very slow, you go around it. And then a whole world opens up through this tool. And then you can work on the movements without the tool. So there's a whole world there. So although it intends to be a commercial document, it's also somehow a research document. And I'm very interested in this possibility of looking at videos as research documents and also of making videos as research documents. This is a little growing, and please send me contributions, syllabus of videos that for me highlight a certain possibility of producing video objects that have a certain relationship to embodied technique. Starting with the first two are the two I showed you, the epistemic objects with four channels and the Fighting Monkeys practice ball video. And then it goes into some of these things from dance studies, from the digital analysis of dance, and there's some other examples. So Some of the videos that we've looked at, certainly this one, have a kind of athletic emphasis. This is certainly on the border between dance and martial arts, also in terms of where their training is coming from. I think that if we're going to think about video in a larger context and think about it epistemologically and think about it in terms of the different kinds of knowledge that circulate through it, it's important to not reject but situate that athletic emphasis and that movement emphasis. And that's a very strong one. You can put on YouTube and see people doing extraordinary flips and jumps and leaps and really amazing things. Of course, you have the Olympics for that, but then you have people doing all kinds of things that are not in the Olympics that are just extraordinary possibilities of the body that are very evidently visible immediately, like, wow, I didn't know a body could do that. But that isn't necessarily the field that we want to be thinking about if we're thinking about embodied knowledge in a larger sense. And in fact, we probably want to push against that and think about subtler kinds of embodied knowledge, things about embodied knowledge that is not so evident. Probably song is a useful one because that's another, in relation to post-Grotowskian practices, and it's going to show up in the videos of my work that I'm going to show you. That's something where it doesn't have the same relation to video. And I've been having this conversation very recently about what happens if you only record the audio of song, and of course we know there's a huge industry that is about recording the audio of song, but what is it when you make a video of singing? And it's a different thing, and it's a much smaller industry, and it's much rarer in film, and it's much rarer in television that you have the video of the full embodied act of singing. So I pause a moment before I go into my work, because I want to mention that this territory of a video document is such a large territory, and when I started to look at it, I felt that I desperately needed help from people all over the world, and I desperately wanted to create a space, because I want to create video documents that are research documents coming out of an embodied research. But I want to have a space for it that includes so many things that I don't know anything about. So I thought, well, maybe a way to do that would be to create a journal for it, because there isn't such a thing. There are a few journals that are video, that are made of video, scholarly journals that are made of video. There's, for example, one in media studies. But of course, it's on media studies, so the way that the video exists in the journal is that the video is about video. And there's a big legacy you can take films and talk about the films in the video, and it makes a lot of sense. There isn't a space necessarily to think about embodiment specifically, and embodied practice and embodied research in relation to video. And I have this hunch that there's a lot of territories of embodied knowledge and embodied research which are exploring this relationship to video in different ways. So I want to let you know about this journal because it now exists, and there are now guidelines which are somewhat speculative because it's a form that's being created, but there are some, let's say, preliminary considerations about making a video article and what that might look like. And ethical matters that might arise, which might be similar to, but not quite the same, as those arising from a written text article. And a bunch of indicative links, which is much larger than the video epistemology syllabus that I showed before, which is all kinds of videos that have some relation, perhaps, to embodied practice, or videos that are just about the possibility of a scholarly video essay, perhaps in some other field, but that can be related. So I'm saying that I would be very happy to talk more about it, but at the moment it's in the stage where I'm just working with some people on making video articles, and I'm sending out the net to call up interest and to see who is working with video and embodiment, and who out there is doing things with video and embodiment, who might be exploring embodiment in a really valuable way, but is working with or themselves is able to put this into a video form in order to learn about what's possible there. But because there aren't any publications officially in the journal yet, I don't have more to share with you there. I can only share with you some prototypes that I've been developing of my own embodied research and embodied practice, which are not in the journal, but eventually something, they are like prototypes, so I'm developing what might be possible. So here's one. I won't show you the video, but it is available, everything is available online. It's about 4 minutes long. It's a document of physical training. So again, as a starting point, this one is emphasizing physical training. It has some kind of athleticism, although it's a different kind. It's coming from a post-Grotowski and physical training, so there's something in it that's maybe more, I won't even try to say it. In any case, what's interesting for me here is an experiment of juxtaposition, of density in the video. So this one is very dense, because one thing that I have been thinking about scholarly video essays is that part of what's exciting about having them be scholarly and in a scholarly context is that they could be allowed to be very dense. They wouldn't necessarily have to be something that you give to a general audience and you try to attract as many people as possible who are interested in it, and so it should be very accessible immediately to a wide number of people, but they could be sort of quite dense and packed with things, and they could be a little more like a puzzle, lots of information, like when you read a scholarly article and there's all these long sentences and parentheses and footnotes and all these apparatus of density, which it can be very difficult and annoying, but can also, if you're really interested in what's inside of that, it can be really exciting. And a page of academic text can be like, wow, because you have to go in and get, and then there's a footnote over in the, and what is that reference? Because every word has a little tag which says, when I use this word, I mean this whole book. So go and read that book if you want. So there's so much to dig into. So I was thinking about this density. So here you have me in a studio teaching a certain exercise action and a student watching in that moment. But then you have over here another video of the person who taught that exercise action to me. So he's doing the same technique, but you can see our bodies are different. We come from different places. We're very different in many ways. So you're able to see a juxtaposition of two videos. And then there's a photograph which is indicating some... The position of the arms is inspired by Balinese dance in this exercise action. And there's a credit for the image. And there's time code. So there's some layers. Here's another one where you have the same person doing the same, let's say, sequence of actions. So she's doing something and something and something and something. It's kind of a theater structure. She's going over here, she's doing this, she's singing, she's taking this book, etc. But here she's doing it in a big space, and there she's doing it in a different space about 2 weeks earlier, or 1 week earlier. So in that juxtaposition, you can see something about what it is that she's doing, which you wouldn't be able to see if you only saw one of the videos. Because if you see one of the videos, you see that moment of practice. If you see two moments of practice next to each other, you can in some way see the technique. Not in a comprehensive way, but you are able to see a relation between the moments of practice. And there's additional text kind of theorizing that fact, which is that each action in the sequence is not simply being rehearsed, but has been practiced countless times, explored as an epistemic object, and this process can go on indefinitely as the blah, blah, blah. This last image is from a project, which I'm currently in the laboratory phase of this intensive period of embodied research in TRIO. So there are three of us now in the studio doing a kind of embodied research, which is theorized as a laboratory in an explicitly post-Grotowskian sense. And it's about song action, what can be done while singing. It's about, as I mentioned, the fully embodied action of song. But it's also looking to frame that embodied investigation in an interdisciplinary context around it, looking at ethnomusicology and Jewish studies and critical race studies and things that can inform how we think about what we're doing in the studio. In particular, the premise of this, so I worked for about 10 years with songs that had nonsense lyrics and nonsense melodies that I made up, but into which I smuggled various other qualities from a large number of ethnomusicologically recorded traditions and a large number of world music traditions that I was smuggling those into in order to be able to work with those things while postponing questions of cultural appropriation and cultural exchange and identity production. Here, all of that has been made explicit by this premise of saying, well, I will work with Jewish songs, whatever that means, and then this kind of problematic of what does that mean, how would that inform the selection of songs, but much more, there's many ontological layers there to be unpacked, like when you say you're going to work with a song, what does that mean? What is a song? So it's to put this kind of embodied research in relation to those questions, and I think I want to say, in relation to the ethnographic, which has been referred to a few times today, that this project, it has an autoethnographic component, right? Because we are three practitioners in a studio. We all come into the studio with identities. We all come with backgrounds. We come with training, both personal and professional. Then we work with these materials, and we create these video documents. And so the personal process of doing that could have an autoethnographic dimension where we examine ourselves. But in line with what I've proposed to you as a distinction between practice and technique, I don't want to overemphasize the autoethnographic at the expense of what I would like to call the autoethnotechnic, or the ethnotechnic, let's say, the construction of identity, the production of it. So that is to say, I'm much less interested in the question of like, well, I'm Jewish, how do I feel about these songs? That is containing it within me, and containing it within not the past, but let's say the past and the present. I'm quite interested in this bringing to bear this laboratory mechanism where you get to say, what kind of Jewishness could I produce in this space? And borrowing a term from Deleuze, would it be possible, would it be ethical, would it be imaginable to think that I am in some way producing a molecular identity of some kind in the laboratory, a molecular culture, a molecular religion, a molecular race, through this appropriation of Jewish identity, which is in its full current geopolitical significance, very, very complicated and very interwoven issues. I mean, as one to choose, it's not simply that it's one that I can claim, but it's this act of claiming that identity in relation to a wider situation, but through embodied research. So let me share with you perhaps two short videos. Now, these are not dense. No density has been added in terms of video montage. They are just studio clips, a little moment of a practice. Of a research practice.
Now you are reducing the third element of your structures, and you become only a character that comes from a certain place. So the only innovation now you will do is Put yourself each time to another corner of the space and introduce yourself, first instilling us through singing the song and then presenting the movement. Then change the corner of the world and do the same four times. And try to make it compressed.
So it's a moment of solo practice in the sense that I'm the only one you see and I'm alone singing in this space, but you hear the voice of someone giving me specific instructions of what to do. Let's watch another very short clip with two people.
Show off,
So, because these clips are positioned as research outcomes, and also because the people who are in the clips, me and her and the person giving instructions, are the ones who are articulating the videos, like the ones who are making the videos, the ones who are choosing the video clips, and the ones who are naming the video clips, there is a different relation. It's not quite, it can have an ethnographic relation. The woman who is giving the instructions here is also, no, it's someone else who's videoing this moment, but often we are recording each other. So there is this relation, but then we're switching and going inside and moving around the cameras, and so it isn't only coming from, we are working together in this kind of collaborative mode to generate these materials which come from the research. These are two clips from many hours of footage from only the first month of a 6-month collaboration between these three people. So there's many layers of density and analysis that we could do of what's emerging. And for us at the moment, it's very important to go back now and look at these, this moment like today and tomorrow, to go back and look at them and say, what are we doing in these? What's the most interesting things that we're doing in these? What do we want to pursue? What's missing? What have we not considered? What are some important gaps? And to use this video that we've made so far as an informing the next month, and then we will do that again, and we're constantly talking in relation to the video coming out. Because what's interesting here, I mean, these two clips, of course I chose them because I think they have something interesting in them, but they are part of this big catalog. So here is something, it's online, so it's already, we're posting these short clips, so selected from much larger, because we have every day, we have, you know, could be like 3 or 4 hours of video. Then we divide it up and we're selecting 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. So we're choosing what is interesting and what we think we could share. And then we're putting it here. This is already out of date because I put some more up last night, so it's like a live document. But it's this field that's really interesting to me. And the number, so now there's maybe, I think there's 35 videos up there now, short videos. And because they're short and because they're titled, they don't exist only as like you have to go into the video and watch it for 20 minutes and see what happens. They start to map some kind of, they start to be what I'm dreaming of, a post-structuralist map of technique. A post-structuralist map of a particular area of technique where we're not beginning from any structure of like we will explore voice with story and movement qualities with resonance. But we are actually just playing in ways, the way we're structuring the studio work is actually currently mostly about the roles. So it's about who's directing. So that the leadership is being shared and the documentation is being shared. And out of that is arising whatever the three of us are able to impulse from each other. And then we're mapping it and then we're titling it and arguing over the titles and saying, for example, in this one, fourth up, Agnieszka said, she called it generating life energy, and I said, could we maybe use this Hebrew word which comes from Martin Buber's analysis of the Hasidic movement, because that would kind of ground it in what the association is for me. What is this, sustaining a dynamic? I'm still not sure dynamic is the right word. So we're hashing out the language in this kind of mapping process, but in this tussle with video. So it's a space, it's some kind of epistemic territory, an epistemic space of embodied technique. It's not as far as you could go in terms of pushing the limits of what's available to video, so the most kind of, I think in some moments, but overall I would say we're not, for example, going into a very somatic territory of sensation, sensation-based technique, where that would be the most kind of like, how can we possibly get this on video, but I think actually some of the questions are the same, because you get it by the conversation in relation to what happens. But it's a particular area. But the much larger field of what can be captured on video, and how to bring video into some kind of structured embodied practice, how to produce video documents that you then wrestle with and name, is I think something that is another direction of thinking about video that could be maybe fruitfully put in relation to what anthropology is doing with video, and as well as what everybody in the world is doing with video. Thank you.